It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Every single woman who meets him instantly wants to sleep with him, or they're flirting with him.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi. We also, the show is also available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which we have photos.
Oh, no, I forgot to put that up. I'll put that up during the show. Live blogging during the show.
Wow.
Yep.
And you can check that out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com. And the voice that you just heard.
You mean before mine?
As voted by the readers of Nouveau magazine for the second consecutive year, Indianapolis's third favorite radio personality, Matthew Sozi. Hello, good evening. My name is Kobe Slagle, and nobody knows me.
That's not true. We know you, and we love you. You're back. You are back.
Back.
You
had a vengeance.
That's right. We are back and stronger than ever. Because we had to each separately go up to my home state of Michigan. Kobe had a wedding,
yep.
Your best man's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it's just wedding season, isn't it?
It is. It's wedding season. If this was the movie Wedding Crashers, we would be getting close to the end of wedding season.
You know what? That film is 30 minutes too long.
That film is also 10 years old now.
Yes, it is.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can, actually, because Vince Vaughn's been on your list for quite a while.
Man.
Or as I think when the internship opened, The Onion referred to it as the funniest film of 2005. And Emma saw a trailer for that and wanted to see it, but I... Let's give Curtis a rest. I, being pop culture Atticus Finch, put my foot down and said, no, you cannot watch this Owen Wilson-Vince Vaughn collaboration until you've seen Wedding Crashers. And then she sulked, and that was that. So I rule my household with an iron fist, at least at the DVD player. So, welcome back, sir.
Yep.
And because you're back, I'm going to start the show with this, because we always at least start the few minutes of the film show with non-film nonsense. But, and I'm sure I'm breaking some rule because Fair Sweet Bianca is not here, although the door is always open for the former Twilight correspondent. But your wedding shower gifts,
oh my goodness,
gifts are here.
Do I get to open this on air, or is it even wrapped inside?
I say
this
open
thing?
It on air, and then I know Bianca will be angry because she wasn't here for it. But it's live radio, so. And I know we're opening a gift on radio.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, you can tell why I got it.
This is incredible here.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
this is something else.
Holy cow! Because of certain news parts.
Did you get this on discount?
Yes, yes, I did. There's his and her. Ladies and gentlemen, the soon to be Mr. and Mrs. Slagle now own their own Tyler Hansborough Pacer jerseys, which I highly recommend just wear at home. There is the yellow, which you know these.
The gold.
The gold, which
the gold.
Is the road. Are those the road? And the
road alternate.
Oh, road alternate. And then the blue.
Or playoff time, gold out. Awesome.
So, because everybody wears the white.
Wow.
Yeah, so you now have your own Psycho T jersey. So you should take a picture of the two of you and send it to straightcashhomie.com.
Oh, man. Too bad he's gone.
Well, unfortunately, I think if you weren't gone, you probably wouldn't have gotten that gift. But so now you you each have your own piece of uniform for white basketball.
Awesome. Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome.
This
you can
cool.
wear that when you're at home watching Pacer games or or Raptor games, really. And if you wear that at a Pacers game, I got to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Hey, that's my brother's jersey.
That's right. Well, Ben's still in the squad, isn't he?
Yep, I think so, as far as I know.
I thought he would have been gone 2 seconds after Tyler signed and went away, went north. Oh, well. Hi, welcome to Film Sociology. Well, we're back. So that was fun. Okay. Now he's looking at the... He's looking at which one he's
going to put it on.
He's looking at which one he's going to wear first. You guys can fight amongst yourselves on who gets the gold and who gets the blue.
Who gets the retro?
Or maybe you alternate. I don't know what kind of marriage you're going to have. So there's that. Second half of today's extravaganza, I'll be chatting with movie writer Mike White out of Detroit. He's been on the show before. He has a recent book out called Cinema Detours, and it's a really fun read. It's a real book and it's really good. Thank you.
Thank it's you. Terrific.
Thank you, Elmore. That's an Elmore Leonard quote from this show. We'll play it later. And I'm feeling pretty good because even though it is August, which is usually a dumping ground for movies, the summer blockbusters are passed upon us, and needless to say, it was a very weak summer. And I'm ready to look forward to the grown-up movie season. But first, we have to go through August and September. And yes, I know there are good films released in August, but a lot of times it's just...
But not this week?
I don't know about Smurfs 2 because I did not see Smurfs 2 because I saw the Smurfs. And I don't think there needs to be another one of those. But they made one despite my wishes. So they don't listen to me. Maybe that's why I'm not in Hollywood. That's why I'm here in Indianapolis. But opening today is an action film with Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg. It's called Two Guns, numeral two. Mm-hmm. So that means...
Not starring 2 Chainz.
No.
Nope.
No, afraid not. But it's... And by the way, because this is in the numeral two, it'll go at the top of the list. Because it's in... You have to do numbers, then A, B, C. Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. That's how my film library.
I wonder how long this is going to be at the top of your library.
Library?
Mm-hmm.
You're implying that I will buy this DVD.
I am.
Yeah, actually. You know. Oh, well, why don't we hear some audio and then we'll discuss it?
Okay.
Do you have a trailer?
Yeah, I got it here.
Is it Green Band?
As far as I can tell.
As far as you can be. Are you colorblind? You don't know? Well, it's light gray. Oh, wait, it's dark gray. Don't play that one. What the hell's wrong with you?
Terrible.
Yes.
Here we go.
You ever heard the saying, never rob a bank across from a diner that has the best donuts in 3 counties?
That's not a saying.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. I get what you're saying,
maybe
but it's not a saying.
It is a saying. Okay. It's a saying now.
Go!
Everybody sit down on the floor.
Fire and roll!
Let's go, come on!
What's your figure? $40 million.
$40 million?
But I got bad news for you.
What is that?
Is that a badge in your hand?
DEA.
Petty Officer Michael Stigman.
You know Bobby Beans was DEA?
Man, your boy Stig's a piece of work.
Did you know he was Special Forces?
You've been on this limp way too long.
Pull over! Did you miss me?
All right,
right.
On the count of three, we'll let each other go.
All right.
One, two, three.
Now you're making me not be able to trust you.
The bank was a setup. We got to figure out whose money that was.
Well, like we're working together?
No, not like we're working.
Yeah.
No, like we're working in the same vicinity.
Together.
In the same area code.
Together.
Ripped off the CIA. Where's the money? It ain't down there, I can guarantee you that.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
You got 24 hours to bring me the money.
Send the Joker to the thief.
So, partner, what's your plan?
I got a plan. I mean, I'm capable of coming up with a plan.
I'm not capable, I'm just saying you haven't told me. What is it?
I'm working on it.
Yeah, screw it.
What's your plan?
No one expected. You should have seen your face.
Sure you can trust this guy?
Who are they?
Well, yesterday I said they were my family. Today they kind of want to kill me.
Yeah, I understand the feeling.
What'd I ever do to you
besides shoot me?
Free time's over.
Have I properly incentivized you?
More than you know. Make it rain.
You're my people and there's a code.
You fight for the guy that's fighting next to you.
Give me the keys.
You want them? Come get them.
Oh, man! It was uncalled for.
Give me the keys.
You saw that move coming?
That's correct. Give me the keys.
So by that, Mr. Slagle, are you going to take Fair Sweet Bianca to go see this?
No, probably not. It looks like
an action movie with Denzel and Mark.
Yeah, it looks like this, along with Triple X, would be a good double feature if you were in the mood for some shoot 'em up, blow 'em up.
This one's not as ridiculous as Triple X or any of the Triple X's, even the one with Ice Cube. This is directed by the guy who directed Mark Wahlberg in Contraband, the forgettable crime thriller from last year. And this is a film that is strongly relying on the chemistry between Denzel and Mark Wahlberg. And they're fine. The actors in this are fine. Some of the voices you recognize, Edward James Olmos plays a drug cartel, and very well, I might add. Bill Paxton plays the CIA agent. I believe The Onion said he had the Southern accent as if he was coming out of a Quentin Tarantino film. Paula Patton, Kobe, you might want to Google image Paula Patton. She's quite nice. And Fred Ward has a small part in this. And it's interesting, while I was watching this, within the first 5 to 10 minutes of the film, I found three little nods to Sam Peckinpah. And so now I'm wondering on the Blu-ray DVD commentary, when this comes out in a few months, if this will be mentioned, because there is the bank heist, which is reminiscent, of course, of The Getaway. There is a head in a bowling bag, because they're at the house of Edward James Olmos, who's the Mexican drug cartel, which is an homage to Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. And then there's a moment, now animal lovers, don't get too knickered up. I'm sorry, get your knickers in a twist. There's a scene where chickens are buried up to their heads, and some bad guys are using them as target practice.
Not bad guys.
I believe they're CGI chickens, I'm just saying. But that was a scene that was used in Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. So because Film Nerd here recognized those, I wondered if this was going to be a throwback to the old 70s action crime dramas. And, of course, Kobe, you know the 70s.
Different time. Different crime.
Jerk. And this is not. There's a lot of twists and turns. Of course, we find out that Denzel is working undercover, as is Mark Wahlberg. James Marsden's in this film as well. And so it's, who do you trust? Who gets double crossed? Who gets triple crossed? Once you get done with the crossings, it feels more plot things happen. It just feels like the last quarter of the film, the director decides to just say, screw it, and let's just blow a bunch of stuff up. And they do. Or, as Denzel said, makes it rain. So, you know. And by the way, don't you love when explosions happen behind you and they don't knock you forward at all? when you're as cool a guy as Denzel and
you also
and
don't
Mr.
look
Wahlberg,
back. At
you
explosions.
Don't look back, and that's of course
you just keep walking.
That's in the trailer
because
that's what they
it's
do.
It's an explosion. That's nothing new to you.
Nope.
You're a cool
I
guy.
I believe they made fun of that in Hot Fuzz, where the guys actually yes. ran and get knocked over. So thank you for that. So yeah, this the less you think about this film, the more you just get caught up with Denzel and Mark Wahlberg. Like I said, the actors are fine.
The more fun you're gonna have.
Huh?
The more you can get caught up with characters Mark and Denzel, the more fun you're gonna have.
I think so. Okay. I believe that is the case. So do you have?
It's also an art film.
It is not an art film. You're an idiot. And I saw you Google imaged Paula Patton.
Yeah. Y'all love it.
She looks a little bit like Rashida Jones.
Nothing wrong with that. You know, I watched her mom over the weekend.
Rashida Jones's mom?
Yes.
Your mom.
Shut up. She's not my mom. Okay, there's a comment. I'm not going there. No, I was watching The Mod Squad.
Oh.
You referred to Rashida's mom as 60s pretty.
I don't remember who
Peggy
Rashida's
Lipton.
Mom is. Oh. Yeah, I'm going to have to look this
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you're going to have to look that up, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Hear these keyboard clicks?
Yeah, that's him on. Googling vintage chicks.
Yeah, 60s pretty.
Yeah, 60s pretty. Straight hair.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. All right, so that's really it opening in theaters today. Now, there's a couple of notes. Happening at midnight tonight, in case you missed it on cable, but at the Galaxy 14 up on 96th Street at mm-hmm. midnight, they're showing on the big screen, because a lot of people ask for it, Sharknado.
Have you seen it?
I missed it when it was on TV
what was
last
it on?
Week.
It was on last week.
Yes, it was last week. Yes, it was last week. I forget. I was obviously doing more. I think it was on a Sunday, and I think I was doing things with the smarter two-thirds. Mm-hmm. And if I brought up Sharknado to Mrs. Sosie and Emma, I would get sitcom family look. They would say no.
Emma wouldn't be into that?
No.
Really?
No. I think Emma likes some MST3K. And some Spengooly and some Sammy Terry. Well, she likes Sammy Terry, I think, a little more. But she likes some of that stuff, but not all the time. Or mm-hmm. as my best man at my wedding, Laura Jansen, once told me, and I'm gonna censor this, but she said she will always, meaning Emma, your daughter will always watch your crazy stuff, just not all your crazy stuff. By the way, that's parental guidance and advice to you. When much later down the road, Mr. Slagle.
Sure.
So show him Foxy Brown and Coffee. Don't know about Friday Foster and Big Birdcage. Anyway, but yeah, not interested in the least.
Oh.
So anyway, if you want to see it on the big screen, you can go check that out tonight. And I think there's one more film at the IMA. If you have no plans, it's okay if you don't. I took my bit back from you.
There's
what's going on at the IMA?
There's still a few films left at the IMA.
Really?
Tonight.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What's tonight?
Tonight, 9:30. There's Something About Mary.
Wow. You know what? I have to give the IMA a lot of props, because I think because it's an art museum. By the way, I don't hear Joe Scheer saying that's an art film. But the fact is they're doing stuff that's off the beaten path from a lot of what a typical museum movie fodder would be.
Yes.
So good for them on that. Let's not forget, a long time ago, they made, you know, kind of raunchy comedies that had characters you cared about. They had a little bit of heart. This is pre, Judd Apatow. So, mm-hmm. So that's tonight. So bring your gel.
Yes.
And, what's the rest of the season look like outside?
IMA next week, Hoosiers, followed by The Big Sleep on the 16th.
Now, has Spare Sweet Bianca seen Hoosiers?
You know, I don't know.
Have you seen Hoosiers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was about to say, you're wearing a Hansborough. By the way, yes, Kobe Slagle is wearing his Tyler Hansborough.
I've decided I'm going to go retro the first half of the show and then switch it up and go gold the second half. We'll see which half of the show ends up better. Anyway.
So I'm sorry, is your opponent, does that make me Detroit? Is that the case?
Yes.
So,
okay. No, you're Chris Anderson. Next week, Hoosiers.
Man.
August 16th, The Big Sleep.
Ooh, I would love to see The Big Sleep on the big screen.
August 23rd, Rushmore. And then
uh-oh.
August 30th, this is the John Hughes vote. Oh, wait, no. Yes, it was a vote between The Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, and 16 Candles.
All overrated.
And apparently The Breakfast Club won, unfortunately.
Oh, gosh, that's...
And let's see, September 12th, we take a couple weeks off, September 12th, Versailles 73.
Okay. When is the big sleep? What weekend is that? Is that the 8th?
August 16th.
Oh, 16th. Okay.
Two weeks away.
Good, because next week is Shakespeare in the Park, or Shakespeare on the Canal. They're doing Taming of the Shrew, so we'll be at that, which means we should go. You know what? I think the Socies and the Slagles should go see the big sleep.
Oh, my goodness.
I think so. I think we should talk to our smarter halves and plan this.
Also.
Yes?
Down at IU Cinema this weekend.
Are they back? Is it back to school? Yep. Well, not quite for IU, but go on.
Much Ado About Nothing, all weekend.
Josh Whedon's version?
The Whedon. 2013.
Yes, that's Josh. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, good.
Yep.
And I know school, did IPS start this week?
Next week.
But I think Washington Township School started. Somebody started school this week in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. Greenwood did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy. Now, do you feel old? Because are you in the old boat with me? Because normally we didn't have school in August.
Not till
period.
Middle August.
Better than mid to late August. Yeah. It's an entirely different time of month.
Middle August is totally different from mid to late August.
Entirely different time. Okay. I want to move on to something that I don't believe got a theatrical release. It is something that you can check out on demand. It is available today. I believe it opened in theaters. We'll have to check, but I got to see this yesterday. This is the work I do for film sociology, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday, when I was home, I watched not one, but two films starring Lindsay Lohan. Oh. Yes. So I think we'll talk about this a little bit before we get into the Mike White interview, the author of Cinema Detours. But the film that's been much talked about in film circles is the film that she's in called The Canyons. And this is directed by Paul Schrader, and it's based on the novel by Brent Easton Ellis. I think I'm saying that right. This is the gentleman who gave us American Psycho and Lesson Zero. And it is a story of a group of 20-somethings in Hollywood, young 20-somethings in Hollywood. And it's are you playing the trailer?
I'm trying to find it here.
You're trying. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we should play it.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right.
But it's a quartet of people, Lohan being one of them. The other being her boyfriend, played by porn actor James Dean, D-E-E-N. No relation to Paula, as far as we know. But it's intertwinings between he is a producer and that Lohan is his girl, and it's also a relationship between his assistant and her boyfriend, who is an actor, and there's some intertwinings. And if you've seen or read American Psycho and Less Than Zero and The Imposters, which was a mess of a movie that came out a couple of years ago, and this was much talked about because the New York Times did a really good, fascinating write-up on the set of this film and got to witness how difficult Lindsay Lohan was on set, how much trouble there was getting this film made. Paul Schrader, who's a filmmaker that I admire a great deal. This is the man that wrote Taxi Driver. He wrote the screenplay for Last Temptation of Christ. Excuse me. Directed Hardcore, Blue Collar, American Gigolo, Affliction, excuse me, which is on my desk right now. And Light Sleeper, Mishima, and many, many others. And I think a true visionary filmmaker. And for me, one of my favorite filmmakers when it comes to the character in a downward spiral. If you think of Taxi Driver and Affliction and Blue Collar and Hardcore. And even to a degree, Last Temptation of Christ. The frustrating thing about this film is there are moments that this film is pretty good. There's, for instance, the opening scene, and they also do it in the credits, and they use it in place cards throughout the film, but there's this really fascinating montage of old, run-down multiplexes. Not the old cinema houses, not like the Irving here in town, you know, or the downtown theater that most big and mid-sized cities have, but the multiplexes. I was in Michigan last week, and I drove past the first 6-screen cinema, which then became, I believe, 14, and the thing is empty now. So those, the ones that were multiplexes in the 80s, that are skeletons. And I, obviously that's a bold statement about Hollywood, and especially when we get into really vapid characters. So with that, and there's been much talk about, the fact that this film didn't get picked up by a major studio. It got rejected from several film festivals, despite having Paul Schrader and Mr. Ellis involved with the project. And then it finally got picked up by IFC. First off, I was not a fan of Less Than Zero when it opened when I was in high school. And I have an issue, and the Bling Ring was kind of like this earlier this year, but I have a problem watching young, pretty people having problems or going down an abyss. And because it's all surface. And the fact that this is a film that's at times feel like you want to take a shower after watching it. Lohan's character and her boyfriend have a thing where they invite a gentleman over. Sometimes they bring a couple over, and then they film them doing things with each other. The film is also known for a four-person sex scene that took Lohan a few attempts to actually get the shot made. In fact, it was Schrader had to guarantee that this scene stay in the film. So there's quite a bit of nudity, more than your average film, male and female. I think that probably turned off a lot of studios as well. Hard to market, probably get hit with an NC-17. But we hear things, and some of the dialogue is really stilted. Some of the actors slightly better than others. You know, Lohan's doing her best, but still, you wonder how much of this is her holding up a mirror. Is anybody holding up a mirror to her, and is she getting it? Or also the fact that compared to everybody else, she's Elizabeth Taylor compared to everybody else in this film. And I'll get to the Liz and Dick movie in a little bit. We'll see if we have time. But so between that, and I said there are moments that are pretty good. I believe Joe Shearer, the film I'm going to have him on next week. He liked any scene that didn't have people in it. And there are quite a few. Yes, I know. I want him to say that so we can put it in the audio vault. But it's a well-shot film because you have Paul Schrader. Now, you could also lose about 20 minutes of film because there's a lot of scenes of people driving and walking. Mm. I mean, literally driving up to the driveway, getting out.
So it's like Birdemic.
It's kind of like Birdemic. Not as fun as Birdemic.
Oh.
But yeah, it's really uncomfortable to watch at times. And, it's people that I'm supposed to, maybe I'm an old person. Maybe 20 years, if I was in my 20s, would I care about this film? I don't know, because I was 16 and I didn't care about the characters from Less Than Zero. You know, on the flip side, I'd like to see what the actors from Less Than Zero would have done with a script like this. Probably better results. So it was frustrating to watch, and I feel bad. Paul Schrader should be getting a lot more credit than he should be getting a lot more credit, period. So, and there's also a prank. I mean, there's also moments that show what somebody will do to make it in Hollywood. And it'll also, and on the flip side, what people will do to squash another person's dreams. Does this sound like a date film to anybody?
No, not really.
No, not really. So, yeah, just not fun. Not fun at all. Not the worst film of the year, but not fun. So you've been warned about that. And it's available. However, I talked briefly online with Richard Probst and Joe Shearer. I would like to get the group of critics together to watch this with a couple cases of booze. Because there are some line readings that are similar to The Room. There's a few actors in this film that Wiseau would probably cast immediately. So. Play that again. There's like a minute and a half of that, isn't there? But yeah, there are moments of that. Joe even put it in the same breath as The Room. I tried not to because, well, Paul Schrader's a better filmmaker than Tommy Wiseau. Mm. So it's torn. I figured if you're gonna, you know, make it a Paul Schrader film, if you give Paul more, let him do more with the film, and Lohan was a co-producer on this picture, or just let Tommy direct it. And it was kind of stuck in between. So I don't know if this can be at times so bad it's fun. I'm not sure yet. At the same time, I don't know if I want to watch this a second time. Not right away. So now, I think we got enough time. We have the interview is, what, 24 minutes?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I started my afternoon not with the Canyons, but I actually watched the Lifetime movie Liz and Dick, starring Lindsay Lohan as Elizabeth Taylor. Grant Bowler plays Richard Burton, and it's their relationship from the time they meet on the set of Cleopatra up until Richard Burton's death. And watching Lohan play Elizabeth Taylor is a lot like watching Jennifer Love Hewitt play Audrey Hepburn in a TV movie a couple years ago. Looks nothing like her. I guess if you just put a black wig and put lots of eye makeup on her and put her in a Cleopatra costume, that's supposed to work. It doesn't. It really doesn't. And yes, Liz and Dick were probably the first major paparazzi couple. And yes, we know you cast Lindsay Lohan because she's had issues with the paparazzi too. Get it?
No, because it's like the parallels.
It's parallel, except Lohan's no Elizabeth Taylor. Again, not the worst thing ever, because Grant Bowler, I will give credit, is actually pretty good as Richard Burton. He's got the vocal tone down, so I give him that. But them on the movie set of Cleopatra, you know, Cleopatra was at that time the most expensive movie ever made, and Lifetime apparently doesn't have the money to make it look like the most expensive movie set ever made. You know, and yeah, I'm now nitpicking, because if you have trouble with the small things, the big things aren't going to help. For instance, if you do a scene from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, I'm going to know shot for shot if that's accurate or not. It isn't. So, and also, Lindsay.
Nerd.
Yeah. Look who, the man who's just switched jerseys mid-show is calling me a nerd. That's funny. But yeah. Lines like, I don't loathe you, I hate you. And when Elizabeth Taylor is stuck at home when she's not making a movie and she just screams to the world, I'm bored. Yeah, this might be a double feature to do with Friends and a couple cases of beer. I'm just saying.
Just saying.
Just saying. So, all right. You know what? Let's get to our interview with Mike White, and we have time afterwards. We'll talk about what is new on a DVD. There's only one title, and there's a few old titles, and then we have a dead person we like. So, we always have a dead person.
We still got stuff to do.
We got a busy show. He switched jerseys. Anyway, here's my chat with Detroit man and movie writer Mike White. Joining me on Film Sociology, movie writer, author, and all-around cool guy and author of Cinema Detours, Mike White. How's it going, Mike?
It's going great, Matt. Good to hear your voice again.
Good to talk to you once again. So it's funny, I read your latest book, Cinema Detours, right after Roger Ebert died. And I have to tell you, sir, it was much needed, because there was always that anticipation of Roger's new book, whether it was the great films or the bad films or films that span several years. And you've made your own version of it. So bravo.
Well, thank you. Wow, to be even in the same sentence as Mr. Ebert is quite a compliment.
We won't say thumbs, because we don't want to give his family any royalties. So what came about with Cinema Detours, since you've written lots of stuff in the past?
Well, Cinema Detours, you know, the web is so ephemeral, and I had written just a ton of stuff for a website called Detour Mag, based here in Detroit, an online magazine. And unfortunately, they only lasted for a few years before they sunk and kind of went the way of a lot of online magazines. And I had just written just a ton of stuff for them. I kind of went crazy when I finally got a paying gig for anybody. I had never really been paid for my writing before. So, you know, at $5 a pop, I was just writing a ton of reviews. And when the site went down, it was like, oh, I really don't want those to go away. So I decided I would take all of my online reviews that I'd written for them and for the Metro Times and for quite a few other websites and throw them all together into a book and kind of give folks a taste of what I've been doing for the last few years when I wasn't doing Cashiers to Cinema Art, my movie zine.
Mm-hmm. Now, how was it as far as getting permission from, I mean, I know these were your writings, but as far as talking to the other publications, as far as using these, how did that go about?
Well, with a lot of them, you know, I just kind of maintained my own copyright, but just kind of ran it past folks. And, especially the one I was most concerned about was the Detour Mag guys. And the guy who ran that was all for it. So it's like, okay, I mean, I think that probably is like 80% of the book. And then a lot of it was stuff on my own site, and I gave myself full permission.
Well, that's good. We all should.
Nice about it.
Hopefully you had the shades drawn when you did that. So I guess I'm going to put out this ballpark. How many reviews have you written in your career?
Oh, I would say at least 500, if not more. I mean, at one point, this book was the reviews that I had done for Cashiers to Cinemart, the zine that I've been doing since 94, along with the stuff that I had done online, and that book was quite a bit bigger. I mean, that doesn't count all the more like article type stuff, but just like pure reviews, I would say probably 500 or more. And once I saw how big that book was going to be, I said, yeah, I really need to cut this down to just the online ones. So maybe there'll be a Cinemore Detours 2 one of these days, but then the title doesn't make as much sense that way.
Like that makes any sense to say The Last Exorcism 2, or I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you
yeah,
could
titles
you could...
just kind of have lost their meaning a lot of times.
Obligatory Electric Boogaloo comment. Now we'll move on.
Right.
So how was the weeding out process on what would make this book?
Really, it was pretty much I took everything that I had written for the web and just threw it in there. I had spent so much time poring over the last book that I had done, which was a compilation of stuff from Cashiers along with my stuff plus other people's writings, and just kind of picking the best of those and what people, kind of demanded to see in that. And then also, again, with rights, making sure that I had the permissions of the authors, and some people have fallen off the face of the earth and all that kind of stuff. So with this one, it was much easier. I just said, whatever I've written for these external sites or my own that haven't been in print, Metro Times was in print, but also on their website, but things that I wrote for other people, let's take all those and just put them into one book. And then it was just a matter of how am I going to present this. At one point, I had this whole complex idea of like a movie web, because I'm always one to say like, oh, well, this guy who was also in this other movie, who was also in this other film, and kind of create this whole like cross-linking way of doing my reviews. And I was like, well, I could do like a whole big web of movies, and what would be that central nexus? And then after a while, I was just like, yeah, that's really stupid. I should just do alphabetically.
Well, it reminds me of if you blow a day at, not at work, of course, but if you blow a day on IMDb, and you're like, oh, yeah, that person made this. And then you check onto that film page, and you see that actor, that director. And next thing you know, it's 8 hours later.
Right, exactly. And then how many people are you away from Kevin Bacon?
Me? Are you asking me that, or is that just in general?
That was just in general.
Oh, okay.
As you find your way down that rabbit
right.
hole, then you immediately have to go back and check your Bacon number on that person you're looking at.
Exactly. Or I think of it from a visual standpoint, the Santana band tree.
Right.
Now, a lot of books have done the Pauline Kael 10,000-word essays on Lawrence of Arabia and films like that. And this book really runs the gamut of quote-unquote big important art films. But, of course, I think a big crust of it, which I enjoyed, were films that we either saw in the video store in the center of the shop, or stuff that we saw on cable, or stuff that we wound up seeing at the drive-in. And it's a really nice mix of films.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I tried to go all different places, from everywhere from the art house to the outhouse. I just wanted to really kind of give people a taste of what was out there. Some of the, there are some very mainstream movies, but then there are some more movies that are obscure that maybe shouldn't be. So when it came to the smaller films, I tried to make sure that people knew that these were just as important as whatever was coming out at, you know, Toronto International Film Festival or whatever.
Well, give us an example of something that you, maybe a lesser known film that you would like to champion for folks to know more about.
Well, you know, one that I always go back to is Darktown Strutters, the blaxploitation film from the
70s. Blaxploitation biker film.
I knew you would know it. So.
I believe it was like TCM Underground one of the 2 a.m. TCM viewings on a Friday or Saturday night. Was I heard about it, and then I finally got to see it.
Yeah, oh, it is so good. And just, like, so zany, I guess, would be the right word for it. I mean, it's like a living cartoon, really.
Yeah, it is. And you don't when you think blaxploitation, I mean, it can get out there. You think of the car wash fight in Black Belt Jones, but yeah, it's the only thing missing, I think, are the Tex Avery reactions.
Yeah. It really had kind of a Robert Downey Sr. edge to it a lot too. You know, the whole idea of, like, dosing the cops with acid and having the I'm mixing that up with or am I? I'm mixing it up right now with Spook Who Sat by the Door.
Thought Ivan Dixon directed that one.
Yeah, but I'm having like the dumb white cop kind of picture in my mind. But I know with Darktown Strutters they had that police car with that huge dome light on it.
Yes.
Had that bizarre sound effect that would play every single time, and then, pretty much like Keystone Cops kind of stuff. But, yeah, just really like that kind of subversive humor, but then with the blaxploitation biker gals and a great guy group as well with, some very familiar faces in there, too.
Welcome to Blaxploitation Cinema, hosted by the white guys.
Exactly.
And you also had Black Belt Jones on here, and of course Jim Kelly had passed. I'm curious, Mike White, how big of an impact was Jim Kelly in your movie world?
Oh, huge. I mean, between Black Belt Jones and Three the Hard Way, and then, you know, with Black Belt Jones, I used to be, I still am a huge fan of It Came from Hollywood. Do you remember that
one? Oh, yeah, that was my introduction, because it was in the trailer montage.
Exactly, yeah. And seeing that fight, you know, in that car wash and all that. And, yeah, just, so I had seen that so many times when I was a kid, and that music, that amazing score for that film.
Yep.
And then when I finally saw the movie, I mean, it not only lived up to it, it just kind of surpassed it. I mean, again, great white gangsters, like, you know, saying Mamma Mia and stuff in their surprise.
Literally,
and,
yep.
Yeah, and, you know, Black Belt Jones throwing his girlfriend's underwear out the window. You know, he's throwing panties at us. You
That's
know?
Right. And Ted Lang is a revolutionary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I found that at a Blockbuster in Danville, Illinois. I found it in the used bin for $5, a VHS copy. And it was one of the best investments I ever had. This was the film that anytime guests came over, I said, least watch the credits. And if you want to see, you want to see more, watch it. I mean, I don't know how many times I did this with people. And I did this with this film more than any other film I've ever shown somebody.
I believe it, man. And how many people wanted you to turn it off after the credits?
A lot.
Really?
People are different, I guess.
You need a better group of friends, man.
Hey, one of those was my wife. Cut it out.
Oh, jeez. That should have been a warning sign right there.
It's funny because I'm now in the process of looking. I have it somewhere in the house. I'm cleaning the house, of finding the DVD copy of Black Belt Jones, which is part of the Warner Brothers 4 Blaxploitation collection.
Right.
Because you got that in 3 the Hard Way, which, by the way, I still think Criterion should do both of those films.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you would do the commentary and the booklet.
Yeah. I'd be willing, and I would do it for free.
Don't tell them that.
Because we all know how much film writers usually get paid.
going through this list, and this is when I made the comparison to Roger Ebert, I also think of the Medved books, Golden Turkey Awards and Hollywood Hall of Shame, because it's now become a part of reading this book. I'm like, okay, I need to see this. I need to find this. And so now it's become kind of a film geek's checklist on – have you seen this? Have you found it? And what in the process of reading this, I found a couple of the films that you had written about. An example is Best Worst Movie, which is one of the best documentaries about movie making, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love just how sincere that film is, and especially its characters. I mean, and just such a smart movie. I mean, that the director was in Troll 2, but is barely in his own movie. I just thought that was so nice that it wasn't just like this, you know, ego stroke kind of a piece. You know, just him focusing on George Hardy, the dentist turned actor turned dentist, you know, just made such a world of difference. And just to see Hardy's reaction to, like, horror conventions and all that kind of right. stuff. I mean, I still quote him all the time with that. When he's looking around the convention, he's just like, "It's a lot of gingivitis here."
Yeah, who are these freaks? For those who don't know, Best Worst Movie is a documentary about the making, well, the impact, I should say, of Troll 2. And this is a film that actually delivered. I will put it in the same category as Apocalypse Now and Hearts of Darkness, in which they're mm-hmm. both equally enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly. And very informative, and it's hilarious to watch one and then the other and kind of, you know, see what those stories were behind the scenes, or to go back and, you know, see Troll 2 after you've seen Best Worst Movie and then have a whole different appreciation of it.
Absolutely. The other one I came across, and it's because I bought the Otto Preminger box set with Skidoo.
Oh, God.
And this is one I'd been reading about, again, since, like, the Golden Turkey Awards back in the Medved days of the 70s and 80s. This was an Otto Preminger film. That's plus one. Jackie Gleason is a gangster. He's married to Carol Channing, and he takes acid in prison. And it's kind of pop culture, popular mainstream audience's treatment of the counterculture badly.
Oh, yeah. And there were so many of those at the same time. It was like part of a movement with, like, what was it, The Big Cube, the one where Lana Turner's dropping acid,
yep.
and, you know, and, like, things like Myra Breckinridge, where it's just like, how did these things get made, you know?
I think that was the beauty part of the late 60s and early 70s, as, directors had a lot more pull, and there was a lot of cocaine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that one definitely, it seemed like the acid trip might have been going on both sides of the camera.
Yeah, and I think it made the drug scenes in Dragnet seem like Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just that all-star cast. I mean, having Mickey Rooney as the gangster, and Frank Gorshin shows up in there.
There were three Batman
and
villains in that film.
Yeah, yeah.
Directed by another one.
Right. And then having, why am I blanking on the guy's name? The guy who did the music for it.
Oh, Nilsson.
Nilsson, yeah.
Nilsson sang the credits. That was actually kind of cool. Weirdly, but
yeah.
Cool.
And he shows up at the end as one of the little prison guards who's
yep.
like on screen for like 5 seconds.
It's, you know, you got Groucho Marx out of retirement playing. He plays a character named God. He's not actually God. I didn't know this until I actually saw the film.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny, I was going through some of the titles I'd written down, but at the end of the film show, on my film show, I actually use Zardoz Has Spoken. So,
oh, nice.
Talk about a lot of cocaine and warped ideas in the 70s. John Borman followed up Deliverance with Zardoz.
Yeah, so good. And just, yeah, just the idea of Sean Connery in a diaper, you know, just, it really does it for me. Something about that.
And to think Burt Reynolds turned that down.
Yeah, what a fool.
Well,
I don't know. I wonder who has a better pelt of chest hair between the two of those guys.
Ooh, that's tough call because, well, to be fair with Bert, I mean, he did do Cosmo. So Lady's got that going for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was Sean's turn, only his had to be moving and for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you said there might be a volume two. Are you seriously considering it?
Well, I still have all those reviews that I put together for Cashiers. You know, I have to say, you know, these kind of really span the gamut of my writing as far as time frame goes. I think it was, 2007 to 2013, 2012 in there. I mean, I was really close with the cutoff date as far as when I was going live with things. And, I mean, the other stuff ranges from, like, 94 to 2000 and whatever. And so, you know, my rating is bad enough right now. It was even worse when I was younger, so I don't know if I should subject people to that or not.
Well, I'm sure there'll be enough people out there. I know I'm interested, but one person does not make a profit. So,
well, hey, 100 people, that doesn't really make too much of a profit either.
All right,
so
fair
don't
enough.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. do you remember with some of these films? Do you remember the nights? Do you remember the experience? Or whether you were with a group of friends, or if it was a particularly rowdy crowd with the screenings? What can you give us a couple examples of some memorable screening moments?
Well, the Mac, I mean, I've been watching the Mac since I was in high school, and we used to get together, my friends and I, and we would just kind of scour the shelves of Blockbuster for different oddities. And really, once we found that blaxploitation section, we kind of stuck there for a long time, and the Mac was one of those. And we would just pop that in when we were having a group get together and check that out, and just, yeah, that was always fun. And the Mac is such a strange film because it's really... To me, it's not that good of a film overall, but then when you start talking about it with your friends and you start remembering the different scenes and stuff, mm-hmm. and some of the speeches and all that, I mean, there's some great dialogue in that movie, and really the parts are greater than the sum of the whole. You know, there's so many good moments in that film. You know, just the baseball game with all of the
yes.
pimps and everything. You know, and the speech about you know. That giraffes aren't real, but hippos are, and these kind of things. I mean, just amazing stuff. And just the conclave of the pimps and stuff, which really, you know, between that and Willie Dynamite, I mean, it kind of is a direct line to Black Dynamite, you know, just, oh, such good stuff.
And I remember seeing, I saw I'm Gonna Get You Sucker first, and then to see, you know, like the Pimp of the Year contest. And then
yeah.
watching the Mac and went, it was fun. The little connections that were made because of that.
Oh yeah. You know, a lot of these I watched on my own. A lot of them were just kind of hanging out with the VCR, and I do mean VCR.
Oh yeah.
And the you know the old tube TV and checking them out. So, you know, I think the other one would. I remember going to see Faster Pussycat Kill Kill for the first time at college. And seeing a pretty good 16mm print of that, and just being one of many people in the audience being completely blown away because we had never experienced anything like that before. And to just think that we were going in for pretty much a sexploitation film, and just, you know, the beginning of that with the audio track being animated on screen and just that whole speech about, you know, the modern woman and everything, I think from that moment on, just all bets are off, and just everyone was really taken aback by how gorgeous the film looked and just how fantastic it was.
Will that film ever get a proper release?
I don't know. I was really hoping, not to sound crude, but I was hoping after Mr. Meyer passed away that they would have some sort of a better release for it. I remember it came out theatrically again a few years ago and was touring around, but I don't know if they'll ever do like a really good DVD release or what. You know, he was such an independent and wanted to keep his product out of the hands of other people, but unfortunately, you know, that also has some drawbacks too.
You're not being cruel. I feel the same way about The Day the Clown Cried.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm counting down the days till Jerry's dead.
And so are female comics everywhere. okay, I probably should have asked this 30 years ago, but what video store did you go to that had a blaxploitation section? I'm jealous.
Oh, it wasn't just a section. It was mostly just scouring those shelves.
Oh, okay.
In the action section, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we found Black Shampoo at Blockbuster of all places, so we were as soon as we saw the cover, it was just like, oh my God, you know, we have to rent this. And then that led us to the Black Six. And
yep.
Of course, all the other titles that started with B because we were right there in the alphabet. And then, you know, kind of going on from there, branching out into C and D and E and all that. And then they did have a cult shelf, one shelf with quote unquote cult movies on it. It was mostly like Attack the Killer Tomatoes and things, but they did have the Sleazemania collection from Something Weird.
Okay.
And that was another favorite of ours to watch and just see all those insane previews, especially the stuff from the 60s and 70s, you know, like The Psychic and, you know, The Smut Peddler and Strange Rampage. So those were always favorites.
Yeah, and of course you can see all those on YouTube now, which you can also blow a day of work by just YouTubing old trailers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when are you going to make the Making of Black Shampoo book?
Well, actually, I've been working with Graydon Clark.
You have?
His autobiography, yeah.
I'll tell Gray I said hey.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah, he's working on his autobiography. I just sent back a proofed version of it, and it's going to be called On the Cheap, A Lifetime of Independent Filmmaking. And, yeah, it's great. It's his whole career, you know, a little bit of him growing up in Michigan and, you know, what he's been up to since he's been his last film. And, yeah, it's terrific. And then a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. I mean, the whole story of his Lombada movie is fascinating. And, you know, the making of High Riders, everything. He covers every single film that he either was in or directed.
Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, it is great. It is great.
Well, then you should at least maybe do a Vanity Fair article about the anniversary of Black Shampoo. If they can do it with Pulp Fiction, they should do it with Black Shampoo.
They should, yeah. You know, I mean, that's only 3 years away from its 40th anniversary, 76.
Yeah.
40 years.
So you get about five or six people and rattle it off and compile it and sell it to Vanity Fair.
All right, sounds good.
Mike, for people that want to check out more of your stuff, where should they go?
They should go over to my blog at impossiblefunky.blogspot.com, or you can go over to just impossiblefunky.com, and there's links over there.
Very cool. Mike, thank you so much, and really enjoyed Cinema Detours.
Thank you, sir. It's always great to talk to you.
And that's movie writer Mike White, so go check out Cinema Detours. And I want to correct myself. I don't think I said his name correctly earlier in the show. Brett Easton Ellis is the gentleman that wrote The Canyons and American Psycho. American Psycho made fun of rich 20-something D-bags.
I like American Psycho.
I know. I like it because it made fun of it.
Yeah.
Lesson Zero, Canyons, not so much. Okay. Kobe?
Yep.
Kobe?
Yep.
Kobe? Uh-huh. I know you're
doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Maybe we should do an annual show,
like a compilation. Death montage.
Yeah, I guess.
No, how are we gonna do a death montage on the radio?
Oh, I don't know. Well, it just like you do it every week. Only it'll be an hour long.
No, last year's highlight reel was 45 minutes long. I think you're doing this just so we could have an extra Friday off. Maybe. I can't put my finger on it. All right. Anybody who grew up watching movies and TV in the 1970s and 80s, because that was, Kobe?
Different time.
Yep. Actress Eileen Brennan passed at the age of 80, the great husky voice actress who, as I think somebody in the Onions AV Club put it, just a tough broad with a little soft heart if you could find it in the right spot. First film that she did was the Dick Van Dyke film Divorce American Style, and then got a lot of notice for playing the worn out and still alluring waitress Genevieve in Peter Bogdanovich's The Last Picture Show. I'm sorry, directed by film sociology guest Peter Bogdanovich. She also appeared in Scarecrow. She was Billy, of course, Paul Newman's right-hand gal in The Sting. She, of course, worked with Bogdanovich again in Daisy Miller and the ridiculous Burt Reynolds Cybill Shepherd musical At Long Last Love. She also worked with Burt in Hustler. She also appeared in The Cheap Detective, Murder by Death. She got an Oscar nomination, supporting actress nomination, for Captain Lewis in Private Benjamin, who she also played in the TV series. And like I said, a lot of movies, a lot of TV. The last few years got known as the crazy cat lady from the first Jeepers Creepers, and one of her last films was Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous. Great voice. One of those, her voice was born at the age of 40.
Oh, that lady.
With a pack of smokes and a bottle of bourbon. So, thanks, Eileen. Great stuff. And I think I will be buying At Long Last Love sometime in the near future. Okay. New on DVD, G.I. Joe Retaliation. Oh, look at the time. We got to go. Words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Seriously, who asked for another G.I. Joe film?
Not me.
Yeah, Bruce Willis is in it, and Channing Tatum dies early, and The Rock, and whatever. All right, we got to go. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
And we are out of here.
And apparently Fort Myers is here.
Fort Myers is here.
Hi, Mrs. Slagle.